This is Navy Public Affairs Officer Lieutenant J.G. Bill Morgan on the aircraft carrier USS Intrepid in the Gulf of Tonkin off the coast of North Vietnam. At 8 o'clock this morning, four A-1 Sky Raider pilots of Attack Squadron 176, home base in Jacksonville, Florida, catapulted from the deck of this 7th Fleet carrier on what was to have been a normal combat support mission. As it turned out, the mission was neither normal nor support, but it was most definitely combat in nature. Because of their actions this morning, these four naval aviators have joined the elite ranks of propeller aircraft pilots who have successfully engaged and shot down MiG jet aircraft in the air war over North Vietnam. At the time of this interview, one MiG is confirmed downed, one other considered probably downed, and a distinct possibility exists that a third hostile jet was damaged. The four pilots are here with me now. The executive officer of VA-176, Lieutenant Commander Leo Cook, led the flight of Sky Raiders into hostile territory this morning. Mr. Cook, could you give us some background on the mission which took you over North Vietnam?
Yes, Bill, we took off about 0812 this morning as a four-plane target rough cap hop in support of some strikes against targets in North Vietnam. We rendezvoused off the ship, proceeded to our assigned rough cap area, and relieved the flight preceding us, who returned to the ship. We covered one strike into the target, monitored the frequencies of the planes running in and out, got a satisfactory heat wet report from all strike aircraft after having heard much in the way of airborne missiles and hostile jets closing the area and engaging the strike aircraft. We were quite relieved to hear the tally of all aircraft back out over the water and heading for their home bases, the three carriers, Intrepid, Aristian, and Coral Sea. We relaxed a little bit then and waited for the timing of the second strike. The second strike itself proceeded inland to the targets, again with the four of us on the RESCAP station monitoring the strike frequency. We again heard much action in the immediate target area and the approaches to and from target. We heard the strike flight leader call that one of his planes in an engagement with hostile jets had been downed, and it was thought at the time that the pilot and flight officer had both ejected successfully. They did hear what was thought to be signals from the crewman on the ground and felt that a successful rescue could be accomplished by bringing in the helicopters and bringing in support aircraft to cover the helicopter in the area and also to cover the pilots on the ground. We checked with the strike flight leader and he gave us the green light to head inland and attempt the pickup of the downed crewman. Lieutenant J.G. Jim Wiley and myself proceeded inland to the scene, giving direction to Lieutenant Russell and his wingman, Lieutenant J.G. Tom Patton, to escort the rescue helicopter into the scene at a somewhat slower speed than we could make, proceeding directly. We had been no more than 1 minute over land when we came under heavy flak from the coastal defense areas. We continued our jinking into the target, or correction, into the mountains and north to the scene of the incident. We were under fairly heavy flak fire for about 5 minutes, and once we reached the mountains, the weather had deteriorated slightly, but we felt that it worked to our advantage and that the hostile forces on the ground were not able to see us quite so easily. We pressed on to the scene of the incident, but before we could get there, the strike flight leader had become low on fuel and had to depart the scene. Once in the area. We commenced our search for the downed crew, but after about 15 minutes of search, had been unable to locate any traces of pilots, chutes, or downed aircraft in the immediate area. We did hear warnings called of missiles being fired some distance away from us, and also calls of hostile jet aircraft closing our location. We then proceeded a few miles south or southwest of our assigned area to get some cover from some accordion-pleated mountains and low cloud cover. We had been in this mountainous area for about 3 or 4 minutes when my wingman, Jim Wiley, noticed some flashes on the ground itself. Thinking it to be ground fire and trying to pinpoint it, he noticed that tracers were hitting the ground coming from a direction behind us. He looked back and just called out in time for me to break hard right, which I did, and immediately saw a jet closing, and upon turning right, pulling up towards the jet to try to bring my guns to bear, he also made a starboard turn in a climb to try to stay behind me and above me. I was unable to bring my guns to bear on the MiG, and he, with his speed advantage, climbed and circled me. At this time, I looked back to my wingman and saw him coming under attack from a second MiG, so I called for him to brake, which he did, the jet overshooting, and Jim Wiley turning back into him, and I think he got some shots off at the MiG itself. At this time, the MiG which had engaged me was coming in for a second run from above the clouds. I ducked over behind the ridgeline, hoping to have the ridgeline serve as a shield for any rockets or guns he might shoot, or perhaps pull him into the ground on one of his high-speed attacks on me. We had engaged the MiGs for some 5 to 7 minutes when our second section, led by Pete Russell with the helicopter, closed the area and descended from their relatively higher altitude onto the attacking jets. I'll let Jim Wiley and Pete Russell, Tom Patton, give you their rundown of the incident. The engagement itself lasted up to about 30 minutes, which time those jets that weren't shot down, we assume, were low on fuel and had to return to their base. At this point, we returned to the scene of the initial SAR incident and continued our search for the downed crew. Knowing that the rescue helicopter was quite low on fuel, we directed the second section, Lieutenant Russell and Lieutenant J.G. Patton, to escort the helicopter back to its overwater SAR position for refueling and landing. They proceeded to escort the jet back out over, or correction, the helicopter back out over the water. Before they were able to do so, they again came under fire from heavy flak concentrations on the ground, and the helicopter itself had an indication in the cockpit of low fuel warning. It was questionable whether the helicopter itself would be able to make its landing station to make the helicopter a little bit lighter, and thereby using a little bit less fuel. The helicopter pilot had the crew jettison as much of the gear in the aircraft that they could, and they were subsequently able to effect a safe landing with somewhat under 50 pounds of fuel remaining. Jim Wiley and myself remained in the area conducting a search for parachutes or survivors when Jim noticed a parachute caught in the treetops near a ridgeline. We circled the area, made repeated low passes over the chute, but saw no signs of life. Later, we figured this may have been the chute from the MiG pilot who had ejected after having been shot by Tom Patton. We stayed in the immediate area until two friendly fighters came to assist us and until we were relieved by our sister squadron on the Intrepid from VA 165. Upon being relieved by them, we proceeded back down the mountain range and back out over the water, where we returned to our ship. By this time, due to the high power settings called for in going to the target, the high power settings while engaged with the MIGs and coming back out, we were a low fuel state and finally landed aboard Intrepid with about 200 pounds of fuel remaining.
Now, Mr. Cook's wingman was Lieutenant J.G. Wiley. Mr. Wiley, I'd like to go back to the initial engagement with the MIGs and hear your version of that engagement.
This is Jim Wiley. Yes, Bill, we went over to the Sawtooth Mountains as we heard the MIGs were approaching us. We got down on the deck. I was in altitude of approximately 400 feet between two valleys, about 500 feet behind Lieutenant Commander Cook. I saw the flashes on the ground, and I thought it was ground fire at first, and I started to call it out to him, and about that time I noticed the tracers were coming down instead of up. I called Mr. Cook to break to the right, and I also broke, and I got a good look at the MIG as he was making his firing run on us. And then I looked up, I saw another MIG coming at us, another firing run. Mr. Cook, by this time, had went over this mountain range, and I was on one side and he was on another. The two jets took off after him, and I thought I was safe at the time. I started over to give him a hand. And about that time, I noticed two more. So we had been jumped by two sections. I engaged two of them, and we hassled for about 3 or 4 minutes. And I got a real good shot at one of them, and I think I saw pieces flying from his aircraft, and he departed to the north with either smoke or fuel streaming out of his wing. At this time, I lost radio contact with Mr. Cook, and I thought he had been shot down. And I still had one MIG to contend with, and then suddenly I was jumped by two more, and I think it was initially the same MIGs that had jumped us. And I had three MIGs there for a little while, and I started hollering for some CAP to come get us. Jet fighters, and our other section of SPADs, Lieutenant Pete Russell and Lieutenant J.G. Patton, were escorting the helicopter in, and they were still about 5 or 6 minutes away from the target area. Lieutenant Russell called me and told me they were on their way, which really sounded good, and we continued to hassle around for a while. The MIGs made several firing runs on me, and I made approximately 7 runs on them, and the only hit I got was the one probable there at first. Finally, Lieutenant Russell and Lieutenant J.G. Patton came into the area with Indian Gal 66, the helicopter. Lieutenant J.G. Patton, made a run and immediately got a MIG on his first one, and I'll let him tell that story about the pilot ejecting. Lieutenant Russell engaged one, and that took a couple of them off me, so I wasn't too busy then, and I could more or less see what was going on. And then I started looking for Lieutenant Commander Cook, who, meantime, was over a range of mountains, and we were out of radio contact because of the terrain between us. We established contact with him, and about this time the MIGs broke off their engagement, I think either due to a low fuel state or they were out of ammunition, and they continued to go north, and we stayed in the area. We finally dispatched Indian Gal 66 along with Lieutenant Russell, Lieutenant J.G. Patton back for the water, and Lieutenant Commander Cook and I stayed in the area, and we spotted the chute, which we later determined that it might be the MIG pilot's parachute. And that's about my account of it.
While the initial engagement was going on with Lieutenant J.G. Wiley and Lieutenant Commander Cook, Lieutenant Pete Russell and Lieutenant J.G. Tom Patton were escorting a rescue helo in toward the area of the engagement. Lieutenant Russell was the section leader on the flight of these two A1s.
I was Lieutenant Pete Russell. As soon as the status situation developed, Lieutenant Commander Cook and Lieutenant J.G. Wiley departed to relieve the scope commander on scene, Tom Patton and I began escorting the rescue helicopter into the area. We started about 7 or 8 minutes after Jim and Lieutenant Commander Cook had begun their penetration. And because of the low speed of the helicopter, we were unable to close the area at as rapid a speed as they were. Immediately upon flying over the beach, we were brought under very heavy anti-aircraft fire, which seemed to be mostly concentrated at the helicopter. Tom Patton and I, Tom following and myself leading our rather mixed flight of three, we tried to spot the sights on the ground to suppress some of their fire to assure we'd make it into the air to pick up the downed pilot. Tom fired several times on sights that he saw on the ground. However, didn't seem to discourage the gunners on the ground very much. One of us tried to draw the fire away from the helicopter, seeing as that plane is rather slow moving and can't dodge as well as a propeller or fixed-wing aircraft. We were under this heavy anti-aircraft fire for about 10 minutes until we got over a ridge line and came under cover of some low clouds and the mountains themselves. We proceeded up to the area in a rather sparsely populated section, trying to remain as far as we could from any major points of civilization. And about halfway up, we heard on the radio that German Lieutenant Commander Kirk had been brought under fire by enemy jets. It was our feeling at the time to try to get up there and help him out. However, we had been assigned to bring in the rescue helicopter, and we had to plod along with her. We arrived on scene about 10 minutes later, and at this time, we felt that because we couldn't maintain radio contact with Mr. Cook, that he had been shot down. We got on the scene, and immediately I saw that Jim Wiley was under fire from two enemy jets, and I called Tom to roll in. We commenced our engagement with the jets. I rolled in on one jet that was on Jim's tail, fired at him, and rolled off, fired at a second MiG that came into my sights. And about 5 minutes later, coming back around into the air after I had built up some speed and some altitude, I was brought under a rather unusual situation. One of the MiGs, apparently after a firing run on one of the other aircraft, was pulling off and was on a direct collision course with her. I maintained the course as best I could, firing all my four 20-millimeter guns at him, and we passed within about 50 feet of one another. I didn't see any damage done to the aircraft, but at point blank range, I don't feel that he had too good a chance. Following that third pass against the enemy jet, apparently they were either damaged or, as Jim said, out of fuel or out of ammunition, and they departed the area. We continued with the search, however unsuccessfully at the time, and about 10 minutes later began our exit from the area because Indian Gas 66 was low on fuel. It took us about a half an hour after we had left the scene to get over the relative safely with the water, at which time the helicopter was extremely low on fuel, and we called the her refueling facility to try to close our area, and subsequently we escorted her back to refueling and land, and we rejoined with the rest of our flight.
Our fourth pilot was Tom Patton, who was the man who knows he got an enemy jet. Tom?
As previously been stated, I was the wing of Reed Russell, and we were assigned to escort to Hilo, and I won't cover that except that a flock that the Hilo did come under initially there was by far the heaviest I've seen over here, and we felt rather fortunate to get the Hilo through that area without substantial damage. Then, as stated, we did hear the encounter of Jim and our XO with the MiGs, and we proceeded on up there, and approximately 5 to 6 miles away, I did see out of the corner of my eye what appeared to be a jet making a pass over in the valley, and I called out to Pete that approximately our 10 o'clock position seemed to be some aircraft, and we headed in that direction then, which is about a 30-degree course change. Upon arriving in this valley area, I called up on the radio to Jim, who was the only one we had contact with at that time. I said, "Here we are, where are the MiGs?" And apparently they had pulled out from their attacks, and one or two of them were up overhead. I didn't see any. And then just as I asked, though, low, about 500 feet below me, I saw this one MiG coming at almost a reciprocal course, not quite. I immediately rolled over and threw him a gun sight, tried to get a shot at him, and since I was turning so hard, I wasn't able to pull off a real good shot, but upon seeing me attacking from above, he pulled up and tried to climb away, and when he did this, I was able to slide under behind him and was able to get a real good sight at him from 6 o'clock directly on his tail, and began firing all four of my guns. And I was lucky enough that I'd been descending from above and I had a lot of excess speed. We're not that fast, but I built up quite a bit of excess speed, and in pulling up I was able to close on him even though he's much faster aircraft for a few seconds, and it brought me close enough to get a real good hit on his tail section. I saw pieces of his tail tearing apart, and I figured I had him, but about the time my guns gave out, so I had rocket pod on my wings. I reached over and pickled off two or three rockets. They missed. And I was rather discouraged. Didn't seem to have a kill. It looked almost certain. And then just about that time, he flopped over on his back and dove through a cloud layer, which at this time, which is below us. We had started out actually below the cloud layer, climbed above it. Now he dove back through it. I followed him through the cloud layer, and as I popped out, the first thing I saw was his aircraft. And then I saw immediately above him the pilot coming down in the chute and his seat falling away, so I realized immediately that he had ejected, either due to loss of controls or to the damage that I had given him. And immediately then, rather than wait around with him, I broke around to the left to see if there were any more MiGs, and there were none. Apparently the other two had left, and we joined back up and found everybody, Jim and Pete, and a few minutes later, we were very, very relieved to hear our ex-air's voice come up over the air. It had been several minutes since we'd heard from him, and as Jim explained, we did think that he had been shot down. That was a big relief to all of us. So we continued to search for the pilot, and as explained, we did feed him our ex-air the helo rod due to his low fuel state. And we were fortunate on our return not to encounter the heavy flight that we did coming in, and the helo was very lucky to get back without running out of fuel. All in all, it's pretty exciting. I think that we were pretty fortunate in some ways not to gotten any damage to ourselves. I think the helo did take a few hits, but the only unfortunate thing, we didn't pick up the power we went in for.
Thank you, gentlemen. As do the other services, the Navy has many nicknames for many things. The A-line is known as the SPAD. These pilots of Attack Squadron 176 are known as the Thunderbolts. In the air war over the North, the code words for MiG alert have always brought anxiety and an extra measure of alertness to every U.S. airman over the North. The pilots of Attack Squadron 176, still flying from Intrepid today, leave her decks confident that the word Thunderbolt has taken its place as a code word for SPAD alert to the pilots of North Vietnam, and that the sight of the diving bumblebee painted on the tail of each Thunderbolt aircraft will henceforth strike an extra note of anxiety in the hearts of the communist pilots over North Vietnam. This has been Navy Public Affairs Officer Lieutenant J.G. Bill Morgan speaking to you from the aircraft carrier USS Intrepid in the Gulf of Tonkin.